TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, don't worry about all those little balls flying all around you, around your head, everywhere you try to walk. They're just cameras. They're just watching your every move and recording it to share with everybody.
Okay, good. I'm glad you clarified what that was. I appreciate that. That good clarification there, Chris. Good clarification.
Speaking of cameras, we can talk about it more in the discussion about how they use it, but they have all these angles on the bridge, but they do tell you what camera is being used. Mm-hmm. But there are so many of them. I'm just picturing like the entire walls of the bridge are just cameras. There are like a billion cameras on the bridge recording every possible angle.
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen this idea before, like in court martial, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we've also seen this idea all the way back with... Chris, help me remind her, because it's the episode where they show all the cage.
That's the menagerie. You know, just watch that.
Menagerie. Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. And so, you know, it's not like we have not seen the idea that starships record all of this stuff. You know, it makes perfect sense. But yes, the way they do it here, I think actually is pretty fascinating. I think that part, having them all hidden. Now, other choices that they make with camera work and stuff and whatnot is not my favorite, but, you know, we'll talk about that later.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking about episode 7 of season 3 today. What is Starfleet? And here's a quick rundown of the story. The long-teased documentary by Humberto Ortegas has finally been released. Starfleet presents themselves as our quadrant's shining example of duty, honor, peacekeeping, says the little brother of Erica Ortegas, who flies the ship. But what separates a federation from an empire? Both colonize, both impose their laws and doctrines on others. Are they explorers as they claim, or soldiers as they appear? They call their vessels starships. What distinguishes them from warships? Filming a mission during which the Enterprise is ordered to transport cargo that turns out to be a sentient being, that turns out to have been transformed into a weapon, certainly begs answers to those questions. As viewers, we watch the findings of this young investigative reporter unfold and lead him down a path he may not have expected. So, Matthew, this episode... it raises the age-old question that fans have been debating for decades. Is Starfleet a scientific exploratory organization or a military organization? So how well, just as a starting point, I guess, overview, how well do you think it tackles that question?
I mean, my opinion with this episode is that it actually doesn't tackle this question very well. Mm-hmm. And the reason that is because what's under the microscope here isn't really about whether or not we're a military organization or whether or not we're a peaceful organization or just an exploratory organization. Mm-hmm. Because what's really happening here, I feel like, is much more akin to the way in which during the Cold War, you'd see the United States and Russia try to, influence races around them, maybe for their benefit. And to me, this is such a much more political, like, thriller, or not really thriller, but there's a lot of political ramifications in this, more so than whether or not Starfleet's a military organization or exploratory organization. Though I don't really think that's the question here. I think it's the question because of the way in which Erica's little brother is formatting his documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the one that's posing the question, right? He's the one who is making this the question that's being asked, mm-hmm. quote unquote. But it's not actually the question being asked by what's happening here, if you ask me. Mm. This doesn't really have anything to do with whether or not Starfleet is a military organization or whether or not it's an exploratory organization. This is a political question about more of, if you ask me, should Starfleet be in? How does Starfleet involve itself in helping other races, especially when it comes to maybe inserting themselves into their wars? Isn't mm-hmm. that against the prime directive in the first place? To me, this is a much more political question than it necessarily is like a militaristic question. That's my opinion. So I feel like if this if you wanted to tackle this question, you should put us in a place where the question of military or exploratory really does come to a head. And I just didn't feel like it necessarily comes to a head with what we see in this episode. That's just where I fall on that.
I mean, I think if this were a movie, or certainly if it were a novel and you could actually explore what's going on with this war between Lutani 7 and Kasar, and why the Federation and Starfleet are involved in the first place, and why Pike has been given orders to move this creature to the war zone, essentially, then maybe you could explore the issue a little bit more. At the beginning, they have a screen that just gives you a little bit of background on what's going on. And it says on Stardate 2177.9, Lutani 7 was attacked by sister planet Kasar as Kasar mm-hmm. attempts to lay claim to the Lutani system and its resources. And they have war casualties, and the Lutani casualties are 9 million and the Kasar casualties are 119,000.
Yes.
However, Starfleet is moving this Jikaru creature to help the Lutani. So initially you feel like, well, the Lutani are very much on the losing side of the war. And so Starfleet perhaps sees that they need assistance because they're being overrun by the Kasar, who are the aggressors.
Right.
But then in the end, Pike makes the decision not to let the Lutani have the creature, which is clearly a massive setback to whatever war plans the Lutani have. So he's going against the original orders, although he does mention that they weren't happy with him, but now that we are where we are, this is going to be the plan. So ultimately, Starfleet turns its back on the Lutani, who appear to need help. So I think it raises a lot of questions about why the Federation would be involved in the first place and who they choose to help.
Well, because again, the question becomes, the Lutani have been using this creature, right? That it turns out is much more sentient than Starfleet originally knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's really where it becomes that issue of you're actually utilizing a sentient being against its will.
Mm-hmm.
And you're forcing it to do, you're making it a slave,
mm-hmm.
and we will not be a part of that.
Right.
In fact, we, as Starfleet, will make sure that this creature is protected. Mm-hmm. We're basically putting up a protectorate zone on this planet, and we're going to mm-hmm. guard it, and we're going to make sure that nothing happens to these creatures again, mm-hmm. because they are, again, much more sentient than we originally new. And mm-hmm. I think that, again, comes down to the real issue. And so it because the question here for Starfleet itself isn't a military one, because we're not involved in any military action. We're involved in humanitarian aid.
Yeah, but if you're transporting a weapon, you're at least indirectly involved in military action.
Right. But Starfleet, at least at least for most of the crew of the Enterprise, don't realize that. They don't know that. I don't even know if originally when they got the orders, if Pike knew the whole story.
Yeah, originally.
It feels like Pike doesn't kind of get the entire story until a little bit later in the episode. Mm-hmm. And so, and this is just where I feel as though, I feel like this is trying to answer a question that doesn't actually need to be answered, right? Starfleet is a military organization and an exploratory
organization. Well, yes, and that's always been
it is
my
not
view.
An either or,
right?
You know, and so many fans, I think, across the years have kind of tried to make it one or the other,
exactly.
When it's really both, because that's the point of it. It is for the protection of the the Federation, but it's also for exploring and hopefully increasing knowledge. And the other part about this that I just really disliked was the whole idea of, you know, the question of colonization, which drove me crazy.
Yeah, that, I didn't like how that was thrown in either because, like, if that were a real aspect of the story, it's fine to talk about it. But the way it was thrown in here, it was just kind of out of the blue and felt inappropriate for the story that was going on.
And it's inappropriate because Starfleet doesn't force anybody to join them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you desire to join us, that's great. All we ask is Starfleet is that you would agree to abide by the things that we as the Federation have decided are law, right?
Right.
If you don't want to do that, that's totally cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we might still be trade partners, but you know, we're not going to force you to join us.
Right. But also, the Federation has a base set of laws and rights for citizens, but overall, the Federation allows member worlds to maintain their own traditions and customs, and you know, it's very light-handed in terms of how it does that. Now, the colonization thing, I think having it mentioned, though, was important for one element of the story, because it shed some light on what's driving Beto, which comes about later in the story, and we can talk about it later as well. But I can see why that was mentioned, but it didn't feel right in the moment when it was mentioned. So as for the question, you're right, and that's how I've always felt, is that this isn't really a question that needs answering, because Starfleet is both. It's a scientific exploratory organization, and it's a military organization, mm-hmm. because it has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even in the dialogue. Beto's talking to his sister, and he says, "I thought the Enterprise was an exploring vessel." And Erica says, "It's space. It's unpredictable. That's why we don't go anywhere unarmed." And that's something that's written into Star Trek in Enterprise, right? Archer goes out, at first, very wide-eyed. He even meets aliens. Yep. He's like, "Hey, we're from Earth. Do you want us to send you a map of how to get there?"
Yep.
And then they quickly realize that, okay, we're going to have to defend ourselves out here. So,
I mean, that's because space is disease and danger wrapped in darkness and silence. Haven't you learned anything, Chris? But we say that as a joke, you know, from Star Trek 09. But in many ways, that's what humanity does kind of find. That there is a massive amount of people out there who are not going to agree with us, and in fact are going to just want to conquer Starfleet and or you know anybody else that's under that flag. And so that's because they find them to either be a threat or whatnot, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the really interesting kind of part to me about all of this, really.
So at the beginning, in the opening narration to the documentary, though, Beto does ask the question, what separates a Federation from an empire? Both colonize, both impose their laws and doctrines on others. Are they explorers as they claim, or soldiers as they appear? They call their vessels starships. What distinguishes them from warships? But I would argue, so the question of what separates a Federation from an empire, I think, is an important one. And I think it's very applicable in today's world, where we see a power rapidly sliding from one side to the other, or potentially doing so. But the other parts here about Starfleet like we were just talking about, both impose their laws and doctrines on others. I don't think the Federation imposes its laws and doctrines on its member worlds.
That's totally untrue.
Are they explorers as they claim? I think we clearly see that they are. Or soldiers as they appear? And I think that the characters answer that question effectively. I think Erica does. Certainly La'an does. That they're soldiers in the sense that they have training. They can defend themselves. But they're not like the Terran Empire that we see in the Mirror Universe that's going around and just conquering worlds. It's not like that. And then the question of starships versus warships. I mean, I think you can see here and what comes to light later in the episode that he comes into this whole project with a narrative that he wants to support. Like, this is his view. And he's looking for a way to support his view instead of actually observing and delivering a non-biased story of what he finds. You know, in the end, he comes around, but it's only because Uhura finally calls him out on what he's doing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a, I think the biggest problem with it is that, you know, she calls him out because he's completely disingenuous this whole time. He's looking to support his own theory instead of coming at something with a question and then trying to judge the facts clear-headedly with a sober mind, you know, and I think that's the thing that is really, you know, bothersome. But yeah, I mean, nowhere do we see the Federation making people do anything or making them follow their rules. Again, to join the Federation, you have to apply for membership. And one of the precursors for, you know, getting signed into the Federation is that you would agree with the laws and standards of the Federation. If you don't, totally cool. We're not forcing you to do this. Mm-hmm. This is your choice.
Right.
All of it's your choice. And so I think, you know, again, that's the thing that really kind of bothers me just here in the episode. Mm-hmm. And it's spending a whole episode answering a question that doesn't necessarily need to be answered and doesn't actually really help this season progress. This is not a bad episode by any standard. It's a decent episode. It's well done. The acting is great. All of that stuff is wonderful. Special effects, yada, yada, yada. My biggest issue with this episode is that it's not important at all for a season that only has two more episodes after this.
Right.
And I really want to see, like, stories progressed. Like, we've just somehow dropped the ball on the fact that Batel was, you know, kind of like becoming half Gorn, half human. We don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. And like, we haven't paid attention to her in what, two episodes now?
Yeah. Well, she was at the party at the end, Matthew.
Yes, she was at the party and she seemed fine, which is great. I'm glad that that's the case.
Well, she was extra hungry because the Gorn inside her was extra hungry.
She's got the munchies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the type of thing where this would be. One, I think this would have been a much better episode maybe in like the first season.
Yeah.
Two, I think this would have been a much better episode in a 22 to 24 episode season.
Well, yes. Yeah.
And three, I think that debating this age-old question needed a bit of a rewrite to make it harder to answer, right? Like, throughout this whole thing, it's so manipulative because of the way that it's edited, but the actual mission doesn't really seem to be pitting so much exploratory versus military as much as I would have liked to really make the question a little bit more difficult for even us as an audience to maybe answer, because like, I don't really feel the tension that I'm supposed to feel with that question personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of feel like it was good to address this question just because you're writing for a broad fandom. And because this is a question that's been debated for so long among fans, and I don't think there's any reason why it has to be one or the other. It's clearly both, but obviously in fandom, that's not a point that has generally been settled on because people continue to discuss it. And we've talked about it on various episodes here on the network over the last 15 years, but I'm fine with them addressing it. I think it's kind of interesting to finally do an episode where they just tackle that question. Like you said, if this were a 24, 26 episode season, it would be easier for this to fit in. And also, yeah, if the nature of the show were purely episodic, like if you go back to The Next Generation or you go back to the original series in particular, it would work better as well. Strange New Worlds is, it's kind of an odd hybrid because it sort of wants to take us back to that time where Star Trek was episodic, but it can't completely do that because people expect ongoing narratives and television today. So it's kind of mixing the two together, which would be a hard task to do in general. And when you only have 10 episodes, it's very, very hard because, again, you're just leaving characters, you know, for what amounts to 20% of the season. You're just abandoning storylines. I am actually glad this episode exists, though. I think in the overall context of Star Trek, if you go out into the future and you look back, I think this is an episode that will be loved for a long time by many people. Because it has its own unique character, and it's really well done. It's very well presented. And like you said, the way it's edited, it is manipulative, but I think that also supports another aspect of the story, maybe the most obvious one, which we've been talking about a bit, which is journalistic standards. If you want to take something that's really up for debate in today's world and that's very important to how people perceive something, you know, here, like if you think the point here is the question being asked is to citizens of the Federation who might be asking, what is Starfleet that all of our non-money that doesn't exist in this future is going towards supporting, right? What is Starfleet? And Beto, as a journalist, is coming in and he is manipulating the narrative. And we just see that it's not unique to our time today. It's, of course, happened throughout history, but in particular today, compared with 30, 40 years ago, for sure, reporters aren't reporting the news. They're not reporting the facts. They're going in and they're writing narratives to support their own personal agendas or the agendas of those that are somehow funding them. And in this case, we get this situation near the end where what's really happened, Uhura calls Beto out on it, is that Beto feels like Starfleet took his sister away, and then she almost died and he almost lost her, and now he's looking for someone to blame for all of this and the fear and the hurt that he felt, and that's Starfleet. He's looking to frame Starfleet as being not who they say they are. And that's a fine way to approach it, but it didn't hit me in the way I think it could have because there are two things. One, I've never become invested in the character of Beto. So his hurt over the near loss of his sister isn't something that I've really been thinking about. And the other thing is that I feel like Beto came across in this episode quite differently than the way we've seen him throughout the season. He seemed, up to this point, he's like much younger. It's interesting to be on the Enterprise. But here, suddenly he's this hard-hitting journalist who's asking the tough questions because that's my job. And that's not the Beto that we got up to this point.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a lot of that I just couldn't agree with more. First and foremost, thanks for spending a whole episode on a character I can't care less about. That was great, writers.
But
great
I don't
choice.
Think the episode was really about him, so that part doesn't bother me.
I mean, I would say that most of this episode revolves around him, though, and the reveal of why he's doing this.
Yeah, it's true.
Which, again, I don't care about. Yeah. And secondly, I think the whole idea about journalistic standards, you know, I think for some reason, people got it into their minds as if journalism hasn't almost always been, for its entire existence, something full of bias. Like every writer and journalist has a bias, unless somebody is literally just relaying the facts of yesterday there was a crime in this place. Yeah. And
but that's,
you know,
what the news that everyone watched in the evening 40 years ago was a lot more of, here's what happened today. And then that started to go away when we started having to have 24-hour news.
Well, part of that, yes. You could get a whole, yeah. I mean, we could go I'm on not a whole soapbox rant about the problem with 24-hour news and the fact that then you have to create news.
Well,
and,
that's right. You're creating news.
But in the end, too, like, I think the biggest problem becomes these days when people try to pretend like they're not biased in one way or another.
Yep.
But they clearly are, and everybody knows it. But they try to pretend that, oh no, I'm just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And that's like, no, you're definitely not doing that.
Well, they rely on the fact that people don't do any research on their own and don't listen to any other point of view and just take whatever is fed to them. Yeah.
And so I would much in these days, I'm much more willing to be able to listen to what somebody has to say if they're straight up about their worldview and where they're coming from, because then I can listen to them. I can put it through a filter and I can then begin to see both sides of an issue much better. It's when we pretend like we don't have that we run into a problem. And so, I mean, that I think is almost the more interesting thing that could have been done here because, you know, we've seen journalism in Star Trek before. Obviously, we saw it a little bit in Enterprise. We obviously saw it in the original series. We saw it in Star Trek Generations, you know, and so this has been a part. Exactly. So we've seen these things, and yet, yes, here I completely agree that Beto just kind of comes off as a completely different type of character. Mm-hmm. And then again, I think the focus on the reveal for him is something that I'm just not really interested in. And it's another place where this episode, because we're nearing the end of the season, there are already storylines that I'm really invested in and really want to see. And especially with after the last couple of episodes, which have really been humming, you get to this episode and it's just kind of honestly a downer because I'm like, oh, we were really diving into the character stories that we had been talking about so much wanting this season. And now it's like, yes, there's character development in this episode. We get some nice bits about Uhura, some nice bits about Spock, a little bit about La'an, some about the captain. But it's not the stuff that you really are getting to marinate in, right? That's again, You have to kind of begin to decide, as this series is only got a season and a half left, what kind of stories do we want to tell? Yeah. And maybe they didn't even know at this point that they were that close. And so doing this episode.
Well, they probably
didn't.
Yeah, I think probably they didn't know. Yeah.
But I also just feel like, And this is my personal frustration, is this season, so much of it has just kind of felt wasted, except for the last few episodes, which have really kind of picked up. And you know, as we've talked through it, like I've been more and more excited. And then again, I just get to this and it just feels like we're just putting the brakes on real hard. Like we were going 120 and we just slowed down to 15 real quick.
I think I think they had this idea. So it's interesting in retrospect. And one thing that I was going to ask you, I remember thinking about after watching this the first time, was And it's interesting now because you've answered my question already in terms of how you view the episode. But I was thinking that as viewers today, are we sometimes too impatient in where things are going with a story or a show, even if it's not a specific storyline? Because I'm just thinking back to, we watched The Next Generation, we watched Deep Space Nine, Voyager, mm-hmm. Enterprise. We watched these shows unfold over the course of 4 to 7 years with usually 26 episodes per season, 22 at the end of Enterprise. And when we look back at them now and we talk about things, we look at moments that happened along the way and then how those paid off down the road. And we think, oh, I really love how this character came together or this storyline came together. But when we watch Strange New Worlds in the moment, we sometimes feel like, why is this character here? Why are they doing this? Beto is a good example. I remember saying myself in the Indiana Jones episode that, why is Beto here? Why does he have the little flying camera? Oh, maybe it's just here so they can get a glimpse of the other room. Mm-hmm. Whereas really all along this season, they've been setting up this episode. The reason Beto's on the show at all, the reason he has the little flying cameras that we've been seeing here and there, are so that when we get to this episode, it makes sense why this episode is here. You know, he's been there to do this documentary. We know he's had these cameras going around all the time. And so they had this idea to do a documentary, to do something different. And I think they set it up quite well. And I think it paid off well. But I do agree that when you only have 10 episodes to work with, you're going to leave a lot of fans wanting, because different fans want different things. Some fans absolutely love episodes like this one or the holodeck episode. And other fans want to know what's happening with Batil, as you're saying. Where is that going? One thing that... Tell me what you think about this. One way they maybe could have satisfied us all with this episode is, instead of having this narrative about these two planets that are at war and this creature that needs to be transported and the ethical debate over that, because Beto's been here, I mean, I think we only first saw him, I don't think he was in Hegemony Part 2, but nevertheless, he could find a way, especially using archival footage, to fill in the backstory that he has to learn about himself as a journalist. He could tell the story of Batil, tell the story of the Cayuga, because he brings up the Cayuga actually to Uhura here, and tell the story of what's happening to Batil. Like, he could tie it in more to what we've seen going on up to this point and provide deeper insight into what was happening. And that would also allow the writers to progress the story of Batil and some of the others.
I think it's a valid question of whether or not we want too much too quickly. My pushback is that we have to have that because we only have 10 episodes a season to play with. And the way these streaming series happened, we don't actually know how many seasons we're going to get. And so every episode needs to be thought of as an amount of time that you're never going to get again, to quote Picard. So make it count in every way possible. And the way you're going to do that, and this is, look, this goes all the way back to what made the original series click with people. They clicked with the characters in the character development, even in episodes that didn't have really connections with them. Yes, nowadays we do have a completely different idea of what storytelling looks like. And that's because that's what they did to us. They're the ones who have trained us to think like this. So if you want to blame anybody, it's really their fault. And so
let's do a documentary about that, Matthew.
We're just going with the type of storytelling that that they have trained us to want and to expect. And so that's, to me, where especially season three of Strange New Worlds, has really fallen flat. It is forgotten that it has already set up threads that we have been waiting for two seasons now to get some hint of, and we've gotten zilch so far. Mm-hmm. Maybe next episode, we don't know. But, and this season, the last season two, and now into season three, they've also set up other storylines that we want to see progress and mm-hmm. seem to have just, in the last few episodes, completely forgotten about. And so when you do an episode like this that could have been done in any series, literally any series.
That's true. Yeah.
And any season of any series, that's my problem. That's why I feel like this episode is a waste of time. And it might be great that necessarily it exists in the pantheon of Star Trek mm-hmm. because it deals with this question, even mm-hmm. though I would completely argue it doesn't really do it that well. But in Strange New Worlds, about the characters that you've given us, again,
yeah,
I don't care about Beto at all. And so I need you to tell stories about the characters that I do care about, that mm-hmm. I've come to love, why I'm watching this show. And so,
yeah,
that's just, I think, the place where you end up. And I hope that in, you know, seasons 4 and then the mini season 5, that they really take that to heart and realize we can't waste any time. We don't have time to waste time, because we don't have time to argue about time, because we just don't have the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think season 5, they will be more focused because they will have a clear goal that they're trying to reach and not much time to do it. I feel like in this episode, I don't know that we're actually intended to care about Beto in the first place. I think he's just the catalyst for the story. And what we're really meant to care about more is how being a member of Starfleet impacts the people who are serving on the crew. And in that sense, I think it worked well for me. Uhura in particular, we learned more about Uhura in this episode than I think we've learned in the entire history of Star Trek, especially learning how she, not just facts about her, right, but like how she actually feels. And I think part of that is because Celia Rose Gooding is a phenomenal actress. I'm more and more impressed with her every episode yeah. of this show. And she just shines so much in this story. And even that closing line just capped it all off. And I feel like for most of the characters in here, we learn a little bit about them. Some of it we already knew, like the stuff about Spock. I mean, it's a new story about something he did. But otherwise, we know that about him already. But I think that Uhura really shines in here and is yeah. maybe the core of the story for me of what we're really meant to care about.
Yeah. Which is why I would argue if you had done this in the first season, it would have been much more interesting mm-hmm. because we would have felt like, oh, we're getting stuff about our characters, you know, I think the thing is that they already have storylines that we're working with mm-hmm. that we really want to see kind of like where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And the bits and pieces are about Spock and about Uhura, again, about the captain, even Ortegas. Yeah, it's all great. But it's not necessarily informing them in a way that makes me feel like we've built on what we've already been getting with them
mm-hmm.
because much of this stuff, like, we've kind of had bits and pieces already of this type of a horror story. We've gotten bits and pieces about kind of how this Spock has grown up and what it's been like for him
mm-hmm.
and everything. And so again, the problem is it's not bad, but I think it's just that it's missing where it would want to be. And maybe one of the most, I guess, maybe interesting parts about the story is Mothra's sacrifice, you know, because this legitimately just looks like Mothra from the Godzilla films.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a nice homage. You know, we're going to talk about homages, you know, having a kaiju homage was nice. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, especially with the little kaiju gorns that we've been getting. So,
yeah, there you go.
It all ties together.
And so apparently the show is just obsessed with kaijus. Obviously the most kind of Star Trek-iness, mm-hmm. thing that can happen is mm-hmm. to realize that something is actually
right.
sentient.
Yeah.
Again, it's not new territory, but, you know, I did love that the reason that the answer that comes down from what is Starfleet, and we see Starfleet do what it does best, which is protect the innocent who mm-hmm. can't protect themselves. And I appreciated that, you know, and I really liked the whole moment that then it gave Pike was like, yeah, come at us, bro. You know, like,
yeah.
you take on one of us, you take on all of us. So, and you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so all of that stuff I thought was nice to mm-hmm. see.
So the Mothra alien, I liked that aspect of the story, even if it maybe isn't the ideal story to try to answer the question that Beto raises at the beginning, unless the answer ultimately, well, in a sense, it kind of, within the context of the agenda that Beto came in with, and then where we landed there, it is somewhat effective because he comes in with the idea that Starfleet is a military organization and they are colonizers. And then he finds out, oh, you're going to take a weapon to help people in a war. And then in the end, they actually, as I mentioned earlier, leave the losing side of the war to fend for themselves because they want to protect this new life form, which has been one of the stated missions of the Enterprise since the opening credits of the original series. And has always been mm-hmm. the case. And by making that decision, it does flip Beto's preconceived notions about Starfleet on their head. And is ultimately true, I would say, to what I always found attractive about Star Trek, is the idea of trying to understand things that are different from you and trying to protect those who need protecting. In this case, helping the Jikaru, but also agreeing to protect her children. And then
right.
also helping her, you know, we won't get into a debate about the fact that the Jikaru herself decides to commit suicide by flying into the sun, and they assist her with that. But they are granting her wish and not trying to interfere because they don't understand yeah. really this life form. They're just mm-hmm. trying to assist the life form that needs help.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me it felt like the Jakaro is doing what it knows that the Starfleet people would do if they could actually impact it.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way for it to be destroyed is to be thrown into the sun. Mm-hmm. And so for it to fly into the sun then it's not necessarily, I wouldn't just say straight up suicide, right? Especially
yeah,
right. when
yeah, I don't think so.
They don't have, it seemed to me that they had made it clear that they don't know how to undo what's been done, which is the fact that this life form has this device in it to which is amping up all of its aggression and mm-hmm. and like killer tendencies.
Yeah.
And so I think putting that all together, that part made a lot of sense. But, you know, I think the other beauty of this episode is that Pike says, look, we're not going to support you this way, but we're not going to let you go. We're not going to leave you hanging. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to continue to support you in other ways. And, you know, yeah. who knows what that might mean in the end, because, you know, it could be a thing that actually does possibly lead them to inviting this group maybe to become a part of the Federation, mm-hmm. and then them, you know, being protected because now they're under the protection of the Federation. Who knows? I mean, we don't really know the situation. That's the other part. All we know is the very basics of that, you know, the sister planet attacked them. Mm-hmm. They've lost 9 million people and they're desperate.
Yeah.
And they're willing to do anything to survive. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's actually kind of an interesting, to me, that's the more, there's so much more interesting stuff here to deal with than this dumb question of whether or not Starfleet's military, because there's a lot of really, like, that's the type of question, right, that Deep Space Nine would have just, like, murdered. It would have, like, killed with a question like that. Mm-hmm. And it would have maybe been, you know, a two-part episode where we're really digging, like a Paradise Lost type of thing, where we're really mm-hmm. digging into, oh man, that's a rough question to deal with. Yeah. And there aren't a lot of easy answers. So how do we do that?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too here is we always talk about how with these streaming shows, they have the time to do what they need to do. And they also don't need to do more than they need to do to hit a time target, like on broadcast television.
Well, and the episode's like 45 minutes long or something.
Yeah, yeah. The actual story is 30-something, I guess. The total runtime of the thing is 40 minutes.
Which is so
weird. That's interesting that, you know, they could have made this longer and fleshed out some things, but they chose not to. I think the runtime is good in terms of a documentary, but at the same time, they could have spent another 5 to 10 minutes and fleshed out some points that probably would have made the story stronger.
Yeah. Well, and you that really comes to the question of, does the concept itself work of utilizing this idea of a documentary? And I think what has made this type of thing work stronger in the sense of using found footage, you know, mm-hmm. In universe, is that it also is tied with the other part of the story, you know, outside of the found footage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of tying this all specifically just to found footage, like, you know, it's a Blair Witch Project for Star Trek, doesn't quite work as well because you're really hamstringing then the storytelling. And so where you could have utilized an extra 10 minutes or more in this episode would have to made this where you're seeing a lot of the documentary, but then it actually kind of pulls out to like, oh, this is what really happened, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Or mm-hmm. In the same way the Menagerie or the Court Martial or any of those episodes worked, right? And so I think that would have been really helpful for the story to really drive home some of these important points that we've mm-hmm. been discussing.
Yeah. One more point about the creature itself. Thinking how events in these newer Star Trek series can inform how you watch Star Trek from the past, because it's happening earlier on the timeline. I did wonder, as soon as we see that the Jikaru is this ocean creature and it comes up out of the ocean, but they hear its sonic waves, the way that it communicates, and they see all that on the screen and they figure out that there's sentience there and then they figure out how to communicate with it, of course made me think of Star Trek IV with George and Gracie and how yep. maybe Spock would jump quickly to the idea.
Yep.
That what they were hearing was being targeted at the oceans and to a life form.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing that this is a different universe, and it doesn't matter because, you know, also the Enterprise is twice the size it was in the original series, so there's also that.
Yeah, so they would have had plenty of room for George and Gracie on this Enterprise.
Exactly. But I mean,
I think they could have put them in Pelia's quarters with all her junk.
Yes, yes. But I really did. I thought the exact same thing that you did, mm-hmm. Because this is clearly just like Star Trek IV. And mm-hmm. how could Uhura not know immediately?
Right.
If this is in the same universe, that makes no sense. Yeah. So that is just one more place where I'm glad I don't care about that, because there are a few things in this episode that actually would be really frustrating. But this is a, so.
I tend to write that kind of stuff off as far as people not knowing. I mean, I joke about it and I say, well, you know, you've got, it's like an arena. You've got like half the bridge crew was involved in all this Gorn stuff, and yet they have no idea who this alien is. So I kind of write that stuff off as, when you're writing a franchise that's almost 60 years old, of course, at some point you have to just go with it and realize that, yeah, of course it's not going to match up because it's being written later. And it can still be fun to kind of tie those little things together.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you choose to do that. You don't have to do that.
Oh, sure. So that, yeah, you choose to do that just, as a viewer, or you choose not to, and everyone's different. Right. I was going to also mention, just when we were talking about this story and all the parts that could be expanded, we've been getting some really nice novels tied into Strange New Worlds from various writers. And there's a lot of stuff in here that they could run with and expand upon the events that we see in this episode. This war, I mean, all kinds of things.
Yeah, there's definitely, I would say, plenty of fodder for storytelling here.
And one last point, because I mentioned it at the beginning that we might talk about it again, just the cameras on the bridge. I was glad that they did take the time to actually do ID numbers for all the cameras and to put those in the footage as they switched back and forth, so that even though I don't know how it would actually work that you get all those angles, there's at least a clear indication on the screen that the ship is equipped with all of these cameras, and they're there because Starfleet needs to record what's happening in an incident, and the footage can be tied to a particular
incident.
Camera. Yeah. So, you know, I like that touch, and I think it goes into, I'll just go into my final thoughts here and then we'll get yours. My final thoughts here are that I'm glad that this episode exists. It does disrupt the story through the season, but I think it's a fun idea. It's a gimmick in a sense, because it really departs from the style of storytelling that we've seen in Star Trek, with a few little exceptions that you've mentioned, you know, court-martial, the menagerie, maybe slightly in the Pale Moonlight, although that's a little bit different because we're not seeing security footage or anything, but we are getting the story shared with us later on. But, you know, I think it's a good glimpse. It's like taking a breather, and it's just a good glimpse into what we've been watching for all of these years, and what is Star Trek? Maybe instead of what is Starfleet, the question could have been, what is Star Trek? And like, this is what we're watching, and we get a glimpse in. And I think the closing was effective in saying that, yeah, there is this side to Starfleet. There is this side to exploring. It is really dangerous. We do risk our lives, but we also form a family. We also have fun moments. We also learn about the universe and, you know, all the awe of what's out there. And Uhura's final line, where she says, "We make Starfleet what it is, not the other way around," I felt did support the idea that ultimately it's the people who are out there together who have to depend on one another. They make their experience what it is, even though they're receiving orders from command. Ultimately, they're the ones out there. And I think we've seen that throughout Star Trek, and I think that it works here as well. And that maybe that's the ultimate message that I would take away from this.
So what are you going to rate this episode?
Well, I think actually I'm going to give this episode, probably quite different from you because I really enjoyed it, even though I see all the points that we're discussing here. I'm going to give it 9 hovercams because I think it is regardless of how it fits into the season, I think it is a very well-produced episode. I think it's just, as a creative professional myself, imagining putting this together, I think the thought that went into it and the attention to some details, like I mentioned, little things like the camera identification numbers and such, and the way it's all cut together, I think it's really well done. And the acting is excellent, as always. So I think it's a really good episode, even if it does take away a week out of our 10 overall. So what are your final thoughts and what are you going to rate it?
This episode is not a bad episode. I think it's a decent episode. I do think, personally, for me, I think the episode, again, which is kind of a refrain for me for this season, but I think it struggles in the writing. I think that it struggles because it has some very interesting ideas, but personally for me, I don't think that it actually is playing with the most interesting ideas that it's asking. And it feels like a lot of times the writers on this show struggle with that. It's like, oh, you've asked some interesting questions, but you're actually not focusing on the most interesting questions. And I think a part of that is because I think sometimes they just become so enamored of ideas that they have that it's like they thought concept first and then they tried to find a story to like cram into that.
Well, I think that's true. And they spent time throughout the season setting up the concept. Sure.
Right. Yeah. And so my argument and where I think constructively, I think that this show needs to free itself from gimmick and focus on character story first, and then allow the stories to fold the character work in, you know, make sure that because the type of storytelling that we're in streaming, that's what we want. We're all here because we love this cast. And like you said, I think, and rightly so, the acting in this episode was phenomenal by almost everybody, except for maybe the actor who plays Beto, who just like, it's like he had to shift gears real quick. It's like a real quick gear shift for him. Yeah. And he
feels like a different character.
Yes. And I feel like he's a little bit too young to be kind of asking these questions in a way that like really works for me.
Well, I think just on that point, I think that actually works well for the story, because I think a problem, if this is a little bit of commentary on today's world, I think a problem is that there are a lot of very young people like that who have this preconceived notion of something, and they're wrong because they don't actually know enough about it, and they're selecting their information to support their view instead of trying to find out the truth. And so in that case, I think that maybe his age
does
work.
Point. Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely an incredible point in that. And I, you know, see it all the time, that they're, and I think you and I can remember back to being young people and thinking we knew everything. And
didn't we?
It took age and experience to, for us to realize that we didn't. Right.
Yeah, right.
In the end, my main frustration with this is what we have said, you know, throughout, is that there should have been more thought given to, is this the right time for this type of episode? Maybe even earlier in the season, it might have worked better. Because when you get to the end of the season, you really want the season to gain momentum. And the last couple of episodes have really gained momentum in what we're doing for the characters, what we've been doing for the storytelling overall, for the series and for this season specifically. And this just, I threw the brakes on in a way that I felt like narratively was too much. And so I people are probably going to hate me, but to me, this is half a good episode, because there's a lot of great stuff in here, But there's a lot of issues with, for me, the way that it's executed. But then there's a bigger meta thing of just creating television as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And Strange New Worlds, more than most other Star Trek shows, has maybe, except for Discovery, which you have rightly said, seemed to struggle with identity and all that stuff big time. This show just can't seem to find like the rhythm that it had in season one. Mm-hmm. It can't seem to get it back. And so I'm going to give this 2.5 out of 5 Mothra deaths.
Wow. All right.
So
there's going to be a lot of people watching those Mothra deaths, which I was thinking also about the windows on the Enterprise. Everyone's staring out at this gigantic star. They must have some incredible like polarization in those windows to
I'd hope so.
Protect everybody. So
yeah,
to get that beautiful view.
Definitely hope so.
Yeah. Oh, just one quick thing that I meant to mention earlier. Talking about character stories that aren't being picked up. The one thing I think happens in Strange New Worlds is that these storylines they sometimes come up with little things that they think are clever tie-ins to the original series or the films, and then they forget about them, as is the case with Cybok, which we've been waiting now forever. And I suspect
it's
that
been
we're
84 years.
Yeah. I suspect that we're probably going to finally see Cybok in the next episode because it's called 4.5 Vulcans. And maybe T'Pring will be there. I'm guessing Spock will be the half of the 4.5 since he's half human. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. But the other one is Batil. I feel like these types of storylines, what they do is they create these and then their intention is we need a big dramatic cliffhanger to go into the next season. And so they just push them to the side and then they pull them back out when they need them at the end. And I feel like that's probably what's happening with Batil, because I don't think we're going to find out anything about Batil in the next episode. So that's going to leave us only 2. So we'll see. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on what is Starfleet. There are many ways for you to share those thoughts with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It is a closed group there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come right on over to us by email. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not pitching your own documentary to networks to see who will fund you and who will send you out into space, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, it's been taking up all of my time, but when I'm not doing that, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me outside all the great Star Trek talk in the 602 Club, talking about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek that we love. Also, over on the Nerd Party Network, with a couple of shows. One is called Owl Post, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, as well as Aggressive Negotiations, as John Mills and I talk about Star Wars each and every week. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just what setting of polarization is needed to keep you from going blind while looking at the Mothra death, where can people find you?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. Considering my eyesight, I might be safe without any. Since I can't see well in the first place. But when I'm not doing that, of course, you can find me in all those shows with you on the network. Also in the back catalog, many episodes and many shows. And you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active these days, but you can send me a message wherever you are. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. We would not be here without your support. So if you'd like to get involved, help out the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And a huge thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we're going to party with 4.5 Vulcans.
Well, Chris, hit it.